Happy Monday! A new day, a new chance to find some success in your life. We're listening to We Are the Champions because, let's be honest, if you're listening to this and you're taking the time to watch this show or listen to this show on iTunes, you are a champion, and I appreciate you taking the time. We have an ultimate champion here today, one of the most decorated Olympians ever. She is the first Olympian to ever win an Olympic medal at 6 straight summer games and the first Olympian in winter or summer to ever compete for an Olympics and win an Olympic medal on 5 different continents. And she is here with all 6 of her Olympic medals. Please welcome Kim Rohde.
Thanks for having me. I don't think my hat's going to fit after an introduction like that, I swear.
Well, you've earned it. I mean, we're looking at all of your medals here with 3 golds, 2 bronze, and a silver.
Yeah.
Do you think about that sometime? And is that mind-blowing to think that you've competed and won an Olympic medal at every Games since 96 when it was in Atlanta?
Well, you know, when you put it like that, yes, it does blow my mind because we don't think of that. I mean, I'm just like everybody else. I put one shoe on at a time and just I'm a mom with a 4-year-old. So, I mean, it doesn't really hit me until I think I'm up there on that podium and they're playing that national anthem and watching that flag go to the top of the pole.
And they just did that again because you are the newly crowned World Cup, right? Or
World Cup final.
World Cup final champion, which you just got back from New Delhi, India.
Yes,
so congratulations. Another one.
Yes, another one. And I have to admit, I'm a little jet lagged, but hey, you know, I'm glad to be here.
And I think a lot of people are shocked, including myself, to find out how many competitions you go through every year. I mean, people think the Olympics are every 4 years, but there's, I think you said 9 or 10 competitions or events that you go through throughout the year?
Well, we have 4 World Cups a year, and then we have World Championships, World Cup Finals, and then just to go to those matches, we have selection matches within the United States. So we're gone about 9-10 months out of the year to various matches. It's a lot more than what people realize.
Wow, that is incredible. I'm very excited to be able to learn more and hear about everything. Again, if you are joining us, we are live here on YouTube at 4:10 every Monday. If you're listening on iTunes, please share some love, like, comment, subscribe, tell your friends. If you would like to follow Kim, she is on Twitter at Kim Rohde and on Facebook, facebook.com/Kimberly Rohde, if I am correct on that. And you can follow me on Twitter, on Instagram, at TheOnlyMC. Share some love. If you find some motivation, let us know. If you're motivated by Kim, please let her know. It's good to share some kindness in the world, isn't it? No matter how you can do it.
Of course. Of course.
Absolutely. So looking at your is there an Olympics that stands out to you as your favorite or one that you maybe have that's most memorable of your 6?
Well, you know, I'd have to say it's the first because you're first in everything, you never forget. And so for me, 1996, I was 16 years old when I went to my first Olympics, turned 17 5 days before my event. I didn't know what to expect or what was coming. And that one just holds a real, you know, something special that I'll never forget. But this medal here, it's actually solid silver with 6 grams of gold plating. And the back, it was the first time they put the event on the back. And you can see a little shooter on the back. And that was the first time for the Olympics. Usually the face doesn't change. It's the back that's unique to each Olympics. Mm-hmm. So if you get a chance to see him, you know, always look at the back of the Olympic medals.
See, that's incredible because, and I think this whenever I'm watching any sport, and I'm 28, and so I'm looking at these athletes in college and even professionals, and hearing you say you were 16, That's mind-blowing to think. What was I doing at 6?
I went back to high school. That's what I was doing.
What was that like going back to high school
with
a gold medal?
It was life-changing. You know, I mean, it really changes your, you know, perceptions of everything. I didn't really know what to expect. I went back, and I was kind of like a celebrity at that moment. And it was a lot of fun. I remember giving speeches and doing a lot of different events, and it's just life-changing. There's really no word to describe it, but definitely for the better as it, you know, I continued on in my path, and now, 6 Olympics later, I kind of have it down. I think I know what to expect or what's coming after after the Olympics.
Absolutely, and you know, at that point, people already knew that you were shooting because you started shooting at age 7 or 8?
Yeah, shooting was something that was really passed down generationally in my family. My grandfather was a houndsman, and he taught my dad, and my mom and dad taught me, and getting ready for, I think it was September 1st, a local dove hunt. Somebody said, hey, you know, why don't you try the club shoot? And then it was the state shoot. It just kind of kept mushrooming from there. And before I knew it, I was going to my first Olympics, and the rest is history.
And you say you won a competition at age 13, an international competition at age 13.
You know, I've won so many, I can't even tell you one or from the other. I know that when I was 13, I won the open women's in American skate. So it was the world shoot. I shot like a let me get this correct. I think I got a 498 out of 500. And that was with four different gauges and shooting doubles in American skeet, if I'm not mistaken. Yeah. And then from there, the Olympic coach saw me and said, "Hey, look, we need you on this team. Come and try the international style of shooting." And it was, you know, from that score that I was invited back to the Olympic Training Center and introduced to the international style, which is what we shoot in the Olympics.
Yeah. And for people who don't know, you're talking about your sport is skeet shooting, which is, if you ever watch skeet shooting, it's where they, you know, you can do it with a hand pull, but obviously the Olympics, they have equipment where you yell pull. Or I don't know if you even yell pull at the Olympics.
Well, we do. So in skeet, essentially you have a high house and a low house.
Okay.
You have seven stations set in a half semicircle with an eighth station being in the middle. And you shoot singles and doubles depending on which station you're standing on. You start with the gun at your hip. And when you call pull, the bird can come out the second you call pull or up to 3 seconds anywhere at random. And the birds actually come out of the high and the low house and they cross roughly in front of you.
Okay.
And then I also did doubles trap in the 1996 Olympics, and that's where you have 15 machines inlaid underground. You have five stations set about 22 yards back from where the targets are being thrown, and we only use the three middle machines on the bunker, and you have three different settings, straightaway and a 5 degree to the left, straightaway and a 5 degree to the right, and two 5 degree angles, and you essentially shoot one round of each setting, and they take the top six, put them in a final round, and that determines gold, silver, and bronze. And, you know, when I say going away from you, the targets and trap are always, for the most part, going away.
Yeah. And obviously, you want to shoot them as quick as you can because the further away, the harder it is.
Well, that and also, too, we're handicapped already. So we're handicapped with the amount of shots. So we're shooting essentially a 12-gauge shell, but with about a 28 gauge amount of shot in the 12 gauge shell. We're shooting a 24 gram 7/8 ounce load.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a very, for all the shooters out there in the world, it's a handicap type load. So we have to be more precise. We have to be more on the target. And then because we're shooting an international game, the targets are actually reinforced with more clay. So they're actually harder to break. So it takes more pellets to actually break the clay target.
So for people who are not familiar with the sport, how much time do you have from the time that clay launches to the time that you have to hit?
You know, I've never really measured. That's a good question. I would say it's just mere seconds.
Wow.
I mean, it's literally, the target's going about 60 to 70 miles an hour.
Wow.
It's, you know, roughly, depending on which sport you're doing. And, you know, it's just mere seconds that you have to kind of calculate everything, get on the target, take in all the adjustments of the wind and the lighting, because all that plays into
it.
It's all the subtle things that you don't see, kind of like golf.
Yeah, and your world record at I believe the 2012 Olympics is 99 out of 100.
Yes.
Which is, I've done skeet shooting before. I did it in Ohio several years ago, and I think I had 15 tries, and I think I hit six. And to hear that you got 90, I mean, that's, the amount of error is minute.
Yeah, there's a lot that goes into it. You know, it really comes down to when you're at our level, everyone's good. I mean, everyone is a phenomenal shot. Maybe I got a little more sleep. Maybe I had a little extra McDonald's for the morning. Who knows? But at the end
is
of
that the go-to?
I'm not going to lie. At the Olympics, McDonald's is a plus. Being a shooter, we can definitely get away with some of those treats more than other sports. But you know, everyone's good at the Olympics.
And I think you hit the nail on the head of it. It all comes down. You have to be perfect in everything. You have to be mentally strong, but you have to be able to gauge the wind, be able to gauge the speed, you know, just the heck, you know, to have your hand not be slippery on the trigger. There's so many things.
Gun mount, foot stance, hold point. There's a lot of factors that play into it. And to make sure that you do it you know, 100 times, nothing different, no matter what's thrown at you. I know in Beijing at the Olympics, it was pouring rain because they had seeded the clouds to create rain to kind of clean up the air. Unfortunately, that was on the day of our event. So it was pouring rain, and we had to compete this just the same. We are literally and hit with all the elements.
That was 2012 when you got 99 out of 100.
Well, no, that was the year before.
Oh, okay.
So, yeah, that was Beijing was the 2004, and then we had 2000. Yes. Yeah. So, yeah, it was amazing. I mean, each one definitely takes a toll on you. The only time they'll stop a match is if there's lightning. Because obviously holding up a metal rod is not a good combination with lightning.
Oh, my goodness. So what age, you know, starting shooting at 7 or 8, winning your first international competition at 13, at what age did you know that you were good, that this was something that you could do and really succeed in?
Well, I don't think I ever really woke up and said, hey, you know, I'm going to be the best. Mm-hmm. It just was something that kind of happened, at least initially. But as I obviously won competitions and did better and better, I definitely knew that I had the ability. And then from there, it was just pushing myself to be the best that I could possibly be. And that just took one step at a time, one goal at a time. And really, you know, like we were talking earlier, never giving up.
Was it just constantly setting goals? At that young age of being like, this is where I want to get by next year, or this is maybe a goal that I have 4 years down the line?
Well, I've always been one to set really high goals, so mm-hmm. ones that seem unattainable, and then just going for it. That was just the way I've always been. I like the challenge. I like being in that moment when you're in a sudden death, you know, type competition, and it's coming down to either you hit this bird and you win it all, or you walk away and you lost it all. So for me, I've always loved those moments. And so putting myself in that position, doing more competition and really striving and pushing myself, because if you don't put yourself out there, you'll never know.
Yeah. And I think so you got bronze in 2016 at Rio. And I think you said that getting bronze is harder than getting gold because you were in such a competition for that bronze medal.
Oh, most definitely. Walking away with the bronze medal, I always say, is harder than walking away with the gold, because when you're out there competing and you're winning the gold medal, it's so easy. Everything is just, you know, everything is just flowing. Going the way it should be. Everything is just working. It doesn't seem like you can miss. But when you're coming from behind, you know you're behind, and you're struggling a little, that's when it becomes hard to try to hold it together. And I know even for me in that Olympics that you're talking about in Rio, Brazil, winning the bronze was also a big record, going 6 for 6.
Yeah, the pressure
and having
was
that
on.
Pressure of, you know, 6 medals. And here I am in a shoot-off for all or nothing again. And of course, you know, we like to keep people on the edge of their seats. It's just, I think it goes without saying, in the shooting sports, it's never easy.
What is going through your mind at that point when you're in, you know, in any competition, but in a competition where it is literally you have no margin for error because it's either you or another person?
Don't miss. That's literally what's going through your mind.
Not even contemplating the thought of failure.
No, I mean, you know that you've done everything you could possibly do. You've put in the hours of training. You've done all the drills. You've worked to this singular moment. And you've literally put your blood, sweat, and tears into it.
Yeah.
It's going to be what it's going to be at the end of the day. And you got to live with that, win, lose, or draw. And so in that moment, there's a knowing that you've done everything, there's this sense of calmness that comes over you because you know that there's nothing more you could have done to change the outcome. And so you just hope for the best and do the best you can, and that's all you can ask for, at least in my case. I can't speak for everybody because
no.
I know some people, you know, still have the knees knocking and stuff. But for me, I get a sense of calmness knowing that there's nothing more I could do.
I was going to say, I think I've heard that from other athletes, too, who have been in those stages. And I think I was surprised almost just as I'm hearing you now, and I'm sure people are listening and saying, what? How are you, like, totally calm in the situation? But it's true of knowing There's nothing U.S. could do. You've put in all the hours of practice, and that's what it boils down to.
Well, I always like to equate it to, like, if you were standing up on stage and somebody put you on the spot and said, sing the Star Spangled Banner, and hand you a mic, and in front of, like, 1,000 people, you have to sing the Star Spangled Banner. But if you had a month to prepare for that, you might feel a little more calm than if it was just thrown on you. And so it's, I think it comes down to your preparedness, how you prepare, and knowing yourself and being honest with yourself, eliminating those fears. If you have any doubt or any fear, it'll eat you alive in competition. Mm-hmm. So eliminating those prior to the match or to the competition, so that when you step out there on that line, you know that you can hit every single target, or at least do the very best you can, and you have this sense of comfort or calmness.
Yeah. Is that something that you, I guess, you know, especially you've been to six Olympics, so your first Olympics, maybe you learn stuff from one Olympic to the next, and that one of those things maybe that you learn to just know the feeling of being on the podium and knowing what it takes to get there?
I think definitely as time has gone on, I've gotten more and more comfortable in that position and have become better at knowing myself and what's going to come in that situation to prepare for it. And I think that just comes with any competitor. The more you do it, the more you're put in that position, obviously, the more you know how to handle it and how to deal with it. And so for sure, yes, I mean, experience does play into it and has helped me through the years.
Yeah. I think a lot of people look at it and maybe say, oh, well, you won your first Olympic medal at 17, and oh, you won six now, and it was, you know, obviously it's been a great path. But I'm sure there was pressure winning an Olympic medal at age 17.
Well, you know, I think there are different things in life that come up. When I was 16, I just loved the competition. I love being in the moment. But as I've gotten older, you know, priorities have changed now. I'm a mom. I have a son. You know, there's a lot of things that change in life. And depending on what is, you know, coming at you at that time in your life, can definitely change the way the pressure affects you, or what pressure you put on yourself. Yeah. Like, I have to win this, you know? So, I mean, it's just different. I can't really explain it, but definitely it does change as you go through the different stages in life.
After you won in Atlanta in 96, your first gold, did you picture and say, this is a sport that I could do, and this is a sport that I could win, you know, 4, 5, 6 medals? Or did other people tell you that?
I think it was a mixture of both. I think when I first made the Olympic team, it was just, you know, the pride of being an Olympian, of being, you know, an American, and wearing red, white, and blue and USA on your back really hits you. And you go to the Olympics and you get, you know, I guess engulfed in that culture at that time. It's just amazing. It's incredible. I mean, Olympics take on a life of their own.
Yeah.
But then as you go along, you definitely go, okay, well, this was the first one. Can I make another one? I make another? And pretty soon you start making the second one and the third one. I don't think there was any one person that stood out that said, hey, yeah, you can go for 6, or you can go for 9, or you can go for 10. But it is a sport that we have that longevity that is unique in that sense, and comparatively speaking to other events. When you look at the oldest medalist in the history of the Olympics was a shooter. He was Oscar Swan. He was 72.
Wow.
I have a few more Olympics in me. That's, I don't know if that's a record I want to go for, but I definitely have a few more in me.
I was going to say, that does beg the question, how many more would you like to go to, or what is the goal moving forward? You've already done 6. We have 2020 is in Tokyo, 2024 is in Paris, and 2028 is back here in LA. What are you thinking for the next decade, you know, 10, 20 years?
Well, for sure, I mean, being that I am born and raised in LA, of course I have to go all the way to at least LA. But, you know, I usually, you know, just take it one Olympics at a time, one competition at a time. Who knows what the future holds, but definitely I don't see an end in sight. There really isn't an end that I'm looking at this point in my life, or this stage in my life. So it could be 8 more, it could be 5 more. I mean, whatever it is, it'll be.
Yeah. No matter what sport, you know, you're participating in, you know, for anyone listening, whether it's shooting, whether it's basketball, baseball, you know, hockey, who you name it, horseback riding, there's so much training that goes in. Talk about how important training is and what training you have to do every single day to maintain the skills that you have.
So shooting has a lot of hand-eye coordination, muscle memory, trying to do something 1,000 times, nothing different. So in our training, it comes down to a lot of repetition. So I go out every day. I shoot a lot of repetition. I will try to shoot 25 targets of every single target on every single station. If I miss one, I'll start over again until I clear 25 or 10 or 15. It just depends on the day. But I'll average anywhere between 500 and 1,000 rounds a day.
Wow.
7 days a week. So I don't take any days off, if that's a tribute to a shooting athlete. And I actually probably shoot the most of any one of my teammates. But it's what I need to be right in my head so that when I step out on the line, I know I can hit every single target and not have that doubt or fear or, the nerves kick in.
And you mentioned that of being right in the head of it is, it's so mental. It's so mental of knowing you can do it, but then not letting, you know, the little things get in your head of self-doubt. How do you overcome that? How, you know, have you ever faced that kind of a doubt, or how do you kind of block that out?
For sure. I think every athlete has faced those doubts. And that's part of being an Olympian or an athlete, is learning how to overcome those obstacles. Mm-hmm. We call them obstacles. They may come in many different forms. As far as the mental side of the game, a lot of my teammates, including myself, will listen to music or have like a melody that will go over and over and over again in our head while we're calling or during a round, to try to help calm ourselves down and not think about those negative thoughts. More focused on the positives, that we do this, 25 times every single day. What's one target? Or this is just like home, or these targets look like trash can lids. So you hear that a lot, when in actuality, they're very small. So,
it's like a mouse's trash can.
So you're really trying to psych yourself for the positive, not the negative. And you look for ways to kind of block out the negative thoughts or turn a negative into a positive, to where you're comfortable with it.
Do you focus on the individual, skeets that are going out, or do you focus and say, here's a set of 10, I'm going to shoot the best for this set of 10, next set of 10?
No, I focus on each individual target. I don't really focus on the score, and I'm really not competing with anybody else other than myself. So when I step out there, I'm looking to better my score, to do the very best I can, and not worry about what other people are doing.
Do you think that's an attitude that a lot of Olympians have, that your main competition is staring back at you in the mirror?
I think some do and some don't. I know that some of the other Olympians, like Vincent Hancock, and some of them do. They definitely are focusing on what they're doing and their game. But I think that just comes with experience, and also with being in that moment over and over again, and just kind of enjoying it and really going for it. And when you're at the top of the game, at the top of the heap of the pile, or the number one, you have to look for ways to push yourself. And if you're looking back at what everybody else is doing, you don't want to be going backwards. You want to be going forwards.
Yeah. I think when Michael Phelps was competing once, there was, they have the cameras underwater, which are incredible. And they showed in one race, the one guy looked back, and it allowed him to make up like a half of a second.
Wow.
And to be able to touch that wall, because he's focused on his race and not anyone else's race. And I think that's even important in life, if you're focusing on so many other people, that you only have so much willpower and mental capacity, and you need to focus on your own race.
Right. And that's really when it comes down to shooting. You hear your heart beating, yourself breathing. You're so focused on that target that some of my teammates have said that they could actually see the rotation of the target in the air. Some of them can say they see the ridges of the target. Each person is unique in what they see when they're in that moment, but it is something that it's incredible what you can do when you're totally focused and giving it your all.
How young were you? Because I heard a story, and I want to, before I tell the story, how young were you when you went to the Olympic training facility?
I was probably about 13 years old, and that was when I was invited back from the Olympic coach after I won the world shoot in American Skeet for open women.
And I heard a story that they sat everyone down, and they said, write down one thing that you cannot do.
Actually,
and they had everyone sitting there, and you didn't write anything.
Well, yeah. So we got there and we thought, oh, we're going to go out to the range today. And they said, no, we're all going to a classroom, which we were all kind of shocked to begin with. A classroom? Yeah. Like, why are we going to a classroom? We need to be out on the range.
The education comes outdoors.
Exactly. But instead, they took us to a classroom and they ushered us all in. And I was one of the youngest in the group. And I was sitting there and they wanted us to write down as quickly as we could all the things that we could not do. And of course, everybody started writing. And I remember thinking to myself, you know, all the things I can't do. Well, what is that? And I didn't write anything. And the coach came up to me and said, Kim, how come you're not writing? It's like the first day of school. Some of these people I've never met before. So I'm like, oh, don't call on me. Yeah. Like I'm scooting down in my chair. Yeah. Believe it or not, in those days, I was pretty shy. And so the funny thing is he goes, Kim, how come you're not writing? And I said, well, because I believe that there's nothing I can't do. And he said, class, stop writing. And about that time, I'm looking for the nearest door.
Yeah. What's he going to say bad about me?
Exactly, right? And I was, like, really nervous. And he said, repeat what you said. And I said, I believe that there's nothing I can't do. And I literally didn't write anything on the paper. And he said, that's what makes Olympic champions, stepping out on that line, knowing that you can hit every single target and not have any fear or any doubt. And, you know, it's something that stuck with me ever since.
Wow. Is that an attitude that I'm sure it was just nice being reinforced at that moment by the coach, but that's something that is you need to have.
Yeah, you definitely do. And I think there's also some of the athletes would say, oh, maybe it's a cockiness. But at the end of the day, you have to know that you can beat everybody on that line. Otherwise, you know, why are you going? You know, I mean, the reality is that you're doing the very best you can. And, you know, it's got to be enough to win.
It gets back to that, you know, mental. It's the mental game of that's the first step that you have to overcome before any physical competition is believing that you can do it.
Oh, for sure. And not only believing, but also training in a way that you're eliminating those fears. Whatever, you know, your fears may be, maybe you have a problem with station two high house or a double on four or whatever the fear may be, making sure that you work through it and be true to yourself, because only you know what you're, you know, afraid of truly. Yeah. No one else is going to be able to tell you. No coach is going to be able to look in your soul or thinks or into your head as what you're thinking to really come up with the answer. You have to be willing to put yourself out there and really work hard and dig deep to overcome those fears.
Does that ever translate to you outside of competition? Have you ever, you know, looking at all the things that you've done, you know, athletically with the sport, to be able to have that mindset of what you're talking about and put towards any life obstacle?
For sure. I mean, for me, I was very shy growing up. I was not one to really want to stand out. And so getting up in front of a crowd and public speaking was not something that I really, truly enjoyed. And over the years is something that I've developed to where I enjoy it more and more now. But it was something that I had to work on. And knowing my fears and getting up there and trying to practice so that I didn't have that, so I didn't stumble or pull a miscongeniality across the stage. You know, it was something that I think everyone can definitely relate to.
You know, winning that medal so young at age 17 and knowing, you know, how high schoolers can be and, you know, there always are critics. And like you're saying, you were shy and it was maybe tough. Did you have critics when you won? Did you have kids who, you know, trying to maybe look down on your sport or trying to I don't know, they were jealous and they were maybe taking that out on you? Did you ever face critics?
You know, I definitely got asked hard questions because of our sport in general, but no,
like what?
No critics from my friends or from my high school or people of that age, if that makes sense. Yeah. I was actually very well accepted throughout my school. I wasn't the most popular, but I kind of ran, I was kind of unique in that I went in a lot of different crowds of people. So I had a very eclectic group of friends.
You're talking about maybe hard questions. What hard questions?
Well, in the shooting sports, I mean, shooting is sometimes deemed politically incorrect. So we get asked tough questions. And it's something that we face as being a shooter.
Mm-hmm. Is it, I was going to say, does anyone ever, you know, look at the sport and it's, you know, and in all fairness, they look at the Summer Olympic sports and they think, oh, they see Michael Phelps and they think swimming, or they look at track and they see Usain Bolt, and they, you know, shooting might not be the most popular sport. Is that something that you've ever faced as far as people saying that, or you feel like you have to stand up for your sport?
I think everybody stands up for all their own sports, no matter mm-hmm. what. I think Phelps definitely stands up for swimming and vice versa for gymnastics yeah. and some of these other sports. But as far as shooting goes, I mean, shooting is the third largest event in the Olympics. We have more countries competing in it than any other event. In China, it's one of the most watched events in the Olympics. So, I mean, to say that I have to stand up or fight, I mean, I definitely am fighting for, showing the positiveness of shooting and showing, you know, the wonderful things that shooting has done for me, like teaching responsibility and discipline and focus and, you know, really showcasing those types of things, because I don't think you hear that as much.
Mm-hmm. The will to push yourself and to succeed, and people, you know, seeing that you've won all these medals, you know, 6 Olympic golds and multiple world championships and world cups, and they think, oh, it's been easy. We're talking about the training. Has there been a time where you really had to overcome something? And I know that maybe in 2013 you couldn't even lift your arm, I think. Or is that maybe the biggest time where you've had to overcome an obstacle in your life?
Well, I've actually had 2 major obstacles that I've had to overcome, I would say, in my sport. One was after the 2004 games, my event was eliminated, and I was forced to switch events. So I was essentially told that doubles trap is no longer. You either have the choice of competing in bunker or international skeet. So that transition, going from being at the top of my game back down to the bottom and having to work my way back up in a completely different sport. I mean, it would be like a swimmer going to diving. The only common thing is the water, but in reality, it's a completely different game, different mm-hmm. gun, different everything. So that in itself was huge, and that was something that I had a huge obstacle to overcome. And then secondly would be when I had my son and being pregnant. I had a very difficult pregnancy, very challenging, and what you're referring to, not lifting my arms, actually, I ended up having my gallbladder removed and not being able to lift my son shortly, about 6 weeks after he was born.
Wow.
Because of a lot of medical reasons. I mean, a lot of things. Yeah, it was crazy. And until just this right before Rio, about a month before, I was given the A-OK to walk more than a block. So gives you an idea of like the severity of things, and it took me a long time. I'm still in recovery. I'm still working to regain my endurance and be able to walk and hike. I cannot have any more kids, so I'm done. I got one beautiful son that I love to death, love to pieces, but that's it for me. No more little ones.
Did you ever think at that point was ending your career at ever a thought in your mind at that point?
Oh, for sure. For sure. Both times.
Both times.
Both times. Yeah, both times. You know, there's a lot of challenges that you face. But more so the second time, I would say, than the first. There are things that you can control, like, you know, you can overcome hitting a target or, you know, not doing as much practice or something of that nature. But when you're talking about medical type stuff, those are things that you have no control over, and mm-hmm. it's going to be what it's going to be.
Yeah.
You just have to try to do the best you can within the parameters that you're given. And that's a different story. It's a lot harder to overcome something like that, or even to go into a competition knowing that you're not 100% competing against people who are 100%. There's a lot of challenges there that I faced.
So what got you through that time? What, when you were hitting that wall, or you looked and you maybe you didn't even hit it yet, you saw the big wall in front of you of saying you can't walk more than a block, you can't lift more than 5 pounds, which includes your gun and your son. What got you through that time and made you want to keep going and to get to Rio in 2016 and future Olympics?
Well, you know, there's a lot of factors that go into it. I mean, for me, I think my family played a huge role in that. Definitely with them, you know, egging me on, helping me overcome those obstacles, and really, you know, loving me no matter what, win, lose, mm-hmm. or draw, knowing that if I just went out there and did the very best I could, it wouldn't change anything. And I was very blessed in having that. But at the end of the day, I think it was just my sheer determination of, you know, never giving up and just grinding through it. I mean, I really don't know. I mean, I guess I like the pain. I don't know. I just overcame it. There's really no one thing that really, you know, you can attribute it to. I think it's just a lot of determination. And, you know, I think when you have somebody, I'm the type of person, when someone tells me you can't, you just like to prove them wrong.
Yeah. I think you said standing, you quoted as saying, like, standing on the podium is addicting.
It is addicting. Standing on the podium is addicting. I mean, it's incredible to see the flag go to the top of the pole, hear the national anthem, the crowd cheering. I mean, it's like the crowd's helping you pull the trigger each and every time. It truly is addicting. And I can say, whether it be the gold, the silver, or the bronze, you still get all those emotions that hit you as the flag is racing to the top of the pole. And you want to run, scream, cry, jump up and down, and you just don't know which one to do first.
Well, you certainly have more Olympics to go, as you're saying. You want to at least be able to make it back to 2028 in L.A. What drives you for these future Olympics? Knowing that you've already, as we said, you already are the first Olympian to ever win an Olympic medal on five different continents, the first Summer Olympian to win an Olympic medal in six straight games. You know, you have the world record. What drives you now to keep going and to want to, you know, get better and to continue on?
Why not? I mean, I guess is the key word there, mm-hmm. is why not keep going? For me, I guess I'm trying to go for that record of Oscar Swan's. I don't know, even though I say I'm not. But I mean, the reality is it definitely is something that's enticing to continue. I love the places. I love the people. I love the culture that I'm surrounded with in all these different places that I get to travel. And I feel very blessed to be able to do what I get to do every day, which is go outside, outdoors, spend a day in the sun, shooting clay targets, spending time with friends and family. And my father's my coach. I mean, it's a great job. It's like a dream job. Why give it up?
Choose a job you love and you'll never work a day in your life.
Exactly.
Does it help with your son? Is that motivation for you of wanting to be able to prove something for him so that when he gets to that age, saying you can do anything?
Most definitely. I mean, I think as any mother will say that they want something better for their child, or want to show them by their actions or by the things that they do in their life. And for sure, I mean, that definitely plays a part in me continuing as well. I mean, my son is always a driving factor.
Mm-hmm. What advice, you know, would you give to the 16 or 17 year old you before you know, obviously now with the medals and championship that you've accomplished, but before you won any of those, when you were 16, maybe going to your first Olympics, what advice would you give to the 16 or 17 year old you looking back on your career now?
Well, looking back on it, I mean, your first Olympics, you don't know what to expect, so you're nervous, mm-hmm. on going to the Olympics and what's going to happen. And I would probably tell myself just to kind of sit back and enjoy it a little bit more, really take in the atmosphere and the people and the sights, and just truly enjoy it for what it is. It's a game. And win, lose, or draw, at the end of the day, you're going to rack them up and do it again, and there'll be many, many more chances at winning.
I think that's a good life advice,
yeah,
too,
for
anyone.
Sure.
Of, you know, you're wanting to achieve these goals, and a lot of times we think, and you know, when you're in your lower 20s, when you're in your teens and you're in high school, you're like, high school is the best time of my life.
Right.
College is the best. It's not going to get any better than this. And you think you have to accomplish these things, and you don't. You have so much time.
You have so much time. And to really, like, you know, just enjoy it. I mean, I think you rush through stuff and you don't really think about, wow, I am sitting here with, you know, some NBA basketball players at an event. I mean, who would have thought that I'd be talking to, you know, Karl Malone or mm-hmm. some of these people? I mean, you got to, like, just sit there and kind of take it in. I think you kind of miss that. But when you get home from the Olympics, that's when it really hits you what it is that you've accomplished, what it is you've done. But really, I would say just try to be in the moment.
With everything that you've accomplished, you know, I love hearing from people of their definition of success. What is yours?
My definition of success would be to be an awesome mom and an even better wife and just really love my family and spend as much time as I can. To me, that is success. But also, you know, not missing out, really being what's the word where you go out there and just try new things and experiment with life, because you as my dad always says, that this isn't a dress rehearsal. You get one shot at it and you gotta enjoy it and really just make time for everything.
Not being afraid of failure.
That's really a key as well.
Oh man, well that's great advice. And I think for anyone listening, again, no matter if you're in shooting, no matter another sport, whether you're even, you know, acting or entertainment or business, that it's the same advice, no matter what you're doing, of not being afraid of failure, not worrying about anyone else, stay in your lane.
And you also have to be willing to put yourself out there.
Mm-hmm.
And be willing to fail sometimes to succeed. I think that's a big part of it, is a lot of people like to stay safe and not put themselves out there. And, you know, you have to be willing to push the envelope, put yourself out there, take the chance, take the risk to see if you're going to succeed. And I think that's a big part of the step,
yeah,
the process.
I'm sure you're glad now looking back that, you know, you didn't stop when you could have in 2004 or 2013. And even
I could
the
stop
other times.
Now. I could stop now and never go to the seventh. But what if I won a seventh? What is the possibility of that? Or an eighth or a ninth?
Yeah.
Do I stop now and play it safe? Or do I continue down that path and maybe I win, maybe I don't, but at least I know I gave it my all.
I love that. I love that. Well, you know, you're talking about the criticism kind of your sport and shooting. And, you know, unfortunately, I feel like I want to be able to get your opinion, obviously, on the events that happened in Sutherland Springs, Texas, yesterday with the tragic mass shooting at the church, 26 people dead, 20 injured. And I'm sure you said you faced criticism and you faced the questions. What is your response kind of from a gun advocate in response to that shooting and the incident that took place?
Well, I knew the question was coming.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Obviously, our hearts break for the families and the victims. But, you know, I mean, at the same time, I would question you. I mean, do you ask swimmers or, say, Michael Phelps about, you know, summer drownings? Or do you ask NASCAR drivers about these drunk driver incidences? Unfortunately, whenever there is an incident like this, we as shooters get asked these difficult questions. And the best way I can say this is that our sport teaches responsibility, discipline, focus, everything that this does not represent. And obviously, we are as shocked and horrified as I think everybody is with the situation. And our hearts go out for the families and the victims. When you talk about gun rights, it's a very complicated issue. For me, I am a very strong supporter of the Second Amendment, and I don't view it as a gun issue as much as I do mental health and a lot of other family breakdowns and a lot of other issues that make it very complicated.
What is your response to people who are obviously now going to be pushing for, you know, gun legislation and, you know, more background checks and maybe, you know, not allowing people to have access to semi-automatic weapons? What would you say to them?
Well, I mean, when you talk about semi-automatic weapons, I mean, I learned how to shoot with a semi-automatic shotgun. So to say, you know, like you lumping them all together isn't really correct or accurate. It's very misleading to people and to the public. As far as, you know, what I would say, I'm actually the lead plaintiff against the state of California for Prop 63, which, to give you an example, in the state of California, I mean, it's really so close to get into all this legislative stuff with something so tragic that has happened. I hate to even go into this, but being 63, for example, in the state of California, having to do with ammunition, the Olympic Committee mails me my ammo, or I would be able to receive my ammo by a match and drive it mm-hmm. across state lines. Both those would be deemed illegal under Prop 63. I can't cross the border, a California border. But if I live in Arizona or another state, I can bring a truckload of ammunition into the state of California. Mm-hmm. So these laws that they're passing aren't really solving the problem or making sense. And unfortunately, that is what we're facing. It's just hurting law-abiding citizens. It's not stopping the criminals or issues like this.
And they've said, obviously, with the case in Sutherland Springs, the gentleman, the 26-year-old gentleman, it was a domestic situation with him and his mother-in-law, who he had sent her a threatening text. So that is certainly the case. What would be your solution? I know you were trained, you know, starting at age 7 or 8, and you kind of had that education. Is that maybe what you think would be able to kind of solve? Obviously, we had the situation in Vegas. We had this one in Sutherland Springs. There's been so many. What do you think is maybe the solution moving forward?
Well, like I said, I think the solution or the problem is very complex. It's not any one thing. Mm-hmm. You know, you look at mental illness, the breakdown of a family. You look at gangs and drugs. You also look at these safe zone areas. I mean, there's a lot of complexities to it. There's not any one answer that's a quick fix. I think that's what everybody wants, and that isn't the case. As far as these laws go, like I said, they're only making me or law-abiding citizens jump through these mm-hmm. hoops. Let's face it, criminals aren't going to jump through those hoops at the end of the day, but that doesn't necessarily mean that there aren't things that you know, can make a difference or can change. But, you know, I'm not in that realm to be able to make those laws or to make that thing. And I'd hate to, you know, comment on something, you know, like you. I'm not up to date as mm-hmm. to what's going on in Sutherland or what's happening on the various this issue or even some of the other ones, as it's so new. I mean, to have all the facts, I don't think they're all out there yet.
Yeah. I think no matter what, education is important. And you know, like I said, I mean, I'm a handgun owner myself, and I grew up in a small town in Wisconsin, and I was, you know, firing probably at age 11 or 12. And I think that helps to be familiar, you know, so that people know how to handle them properly. So it's not as
Well, when you go back and you look at history and you look at, I think of the famous illustrator, what's his name? You know, when you look at all of his painting, Norman Rockwell's mm-hmm. paintings, you will see that there is a firearm in almost every one of those paintings. And they have to do with just a typical everyday average life mm-hmm. in those days. And we've kind of gotten away from that as a society, teaching responsibility, discipline, you know, safety. Those are things that are very important, especially in what I do. And I definitely think that it would, you know, play to what you're saying mm-hmm. with education.
Absolutely. Well, on that note, I want to finish on a positive. I always, at the end of the interview, to kind of, you know, we've gotten so much motivation and inspiration, but I love to do like a quiz and just to be able to
test
your skills on Olympic history.
Okay.
So I mean,
is this an A, B, and C quiz or just like you have to know it kind of quiz?
Some are like multiple choice. Some are you know, just true or false. And so
the pressure
is up, but you thrive under pressure.
I apparently do, but I tell you, this is all so sudden. I'm not prepared. This is like that, you know, handing me the mic and saying, you know, sing the national anthem or something. But yeah, give it a whirl. I'll give it a shot.
We have, I think, about 5 or 6 questions here. So I'll start out maybe with an easy one. So the U.S. has the Olympics in 2028, which are in L.A., and they had it in your first Olympics in 96 in Atlanta. But before that, when was the last time that the U.S. hosted the Olympic Games?
Before
Atlanta.
In 94?
Oh, sorry, I should say Summer Olympics. Summer Olympics before Atlanta.
90, you're getting
tips. What is Mom saying over there?
What's
she holding up? You can chime in. What do we got?
84.
84 Los Angeles is correct. With the help.
Okay, I was like, I can't count over there.
Okay, the first 12 Olympics consisted of one event, and I'm going to give you some options. What was it? A is a sprint from one end of the stadium to the other. B is a discus throw. C is a wrestling competition. Or D is a chariot race.
I would say C, the wrestling.
It's a sprint.
The sprint?
It's
really?
A sprint. And I think they did it completely without clothes. If I remember back from the original Olympics.
Well, nobody's going to want to see me sprint. I'm just going to say that right now.
Oh, man. These are even
can I
ones...
can I just say that this interview went from, you know, bad to like really weird and awkward?
I'm gonna give you I think an easy one. Who has won the most Olympic gold medals?
The most Olympic, well, that'd be Phelps.
Michael Phelps. There you go. And this is I'll close on this one, which I totally don't blame you. I think this is more of a trivia that's completely interesting. What did Muhammad Ali wear while flying to Rome for the Olympic Games in 1960? He was afraid of heights.
He was
so
afraid of heights.
So what would he have worn on the plane?
A parachute?
A parachute!
Really?
Yes!
Really?
That's
interesting.
How wild is that?
That's awesome.
That he would have worn that for the entire time while on the plane. And the flight to Rome, too. That's like 13 hours.
Yeah.
So what's your next...
So do I get to ask you a trivia question?
Go.
No, I'm kidding.
No. You got something?
Well, I got a couple. I could go with a couple.
What do we got?
So who is the first woman to ever win an Olympic event?
Ooh.
I'll give you a hint.
What's the hint?
It was in golf.
It was in golf. Oh, wow.
No pressure.
Do I get a year? I'm trying to think of a golfer.
I think it was
in
1922, I think.
Oh,
she came in first in 9-hole game of golf. Her name was Margaret Abbott.
Margaret Abbott.
Or Abbott or Abbott, I think so. Abbott. And then I know that the first of modern Olympic Games also held a 12-hour bicycle road race. However, only one contestant managed to finish the event, or two contestants managed to finish it, and it was never held again. Something
really?
Of that nature. So, yeah, there's some really interesting trivia. And, of course, you didn't ask any of those. Those are the ones I knew.
But you got the parachute, you got Michael Phelps, and with the help of your mother, you got 84 in Atlanta. So you're
not
a champion
really.
Again. What are the upcoming competitions?
So we have some time off right now, especially through the holidays. But then come January 1, we have competitions. We actually have a World Cup in Arizona here in the States. So exciting that we're going to be on home turf.
That's very easy to travel to.
Yes, yes. So that makes it nice on the same time zone, which is a plus. And yeah, we're excited about it. So everybody's coming over here, and we're going to have a big World Cup in Tucson, Arizona.
Very nice. Well, best of luck on that. And if people want to follow, obviously, how you're doing, they can follow you again on Twitter at Kim Rohde, on Facebook, facebook.com/Kimberly Rohde. Thank you again for coming in. I think it's amazing for people to hear from someone who has been so decorated and won so much of what obstacles you've overcome and what is even your mindset of wanting to continue from
now
on.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you very much for coming in. And thank you guys for joining us for another episode of I Could Never Be. Again, we're live here on YouTube at 4:10 every Monday. And you can find us on Apple Podcasts as well. Go on, like, comment, rate. We love hearing feedback from you guys. If you would like to send me feedback on social media, I am at TheOnlyMC on Instagram, on Twitter. Again, we hope you guys learned something. We hope that this was inspirational for you, that you can take something away, whether you are an athlete, an actor, a musician, in business, no matter what, that you gain something from this. Go be a champion today.
From producers Maria Menounos, Kevin Undergaro, Phil Svitek, and the entire Popcorn Talk Network, we would like to thank you for tuning in. For questions or comments, be sure to visit popcorntalk.com. I'm Sir Richard Wentworth, and this has been a presentation of the Popcorn Talk Network.
The views expressed herein are those of the hosts only. They do not necessarily reflect the views of the Popcorn Talk Network or its owners or principals.